Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. As I mentioned last week, the new website is up. I hope you're enjoying it. I'm enjoying it. You can now, this is kind of pathetic that you couldn't do this before, but you can now actually comment on the website on any article or interview you watch or read. It's very easy. Check it out. Check it out, the interview with J. Anderson Coates, the young adult author, wrote R is for Rebel, among other books. Great conversation with her. That's up there. Check it out, authormagazine.org, and we're funded by the wonderful Pacific Northwest Writers Association. These people have been supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. They know what they're doing. Hold one of the biggest and best writers' conferences you will find in the country every year. It's been moved to September now. That's okay. It's still awesome. Just happening at a different time, same place. You can learn about that at I'll be teaching there. Yes, I will. I'll be teaching there. A few classes, so check it out at pnwa.org, pnwa.org. I say at the beginning of this every show, what it takes to write the book you want to write is what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. It's true. I do believe that to be the case. That's because life is a creative act. It is. Everything you do, it creates something. Every choice you make, just listening to this show, you create something. Your world is different. You can't help but to be creative if you're a person. The question is, are you going to create on purpose or sort of accidentally or habitually? See, the thing about being an author is you face a blank page, so you have to create on purpose. You don't have a choice. The page is blank. Nothing's going to happen until you make a choice. And writing is all about learning the consequences of the choices you make. As you fill up that page, create the reality you want to create. And so, as we learn to write a book on purpose, so too we can learn to live our life on purpose. It's all connected, but it's scary facing that blank page, making those choices. And that's why I wrote Fearless Writing, and that's why I teach Fearless Writing. And I'm going to be teaching another workshop in Seattle on May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, the afternoon of, so before you begin your revelry. You can come over to the Good Shepherd Center in the Wallingford District of Seattle, where I'm going to be teaching a workshop from 12:30 to 3:30. If you're interested in it, swing over to my website, williamknauer.com. Right there on the home page, there's a link to that. You can also go to upcoming events. That's where I've got that listed as well. Check it out. You can learn about it. If you have any questions, you can email me through my website. I'd love to see you there. Fearless Writing, May 5th. Mark it down on your calendar. Speaking of Fearless Writing, I taught a workshop in Fearless Writing recently because of today's guest, the wonderful, the generous, the talented Kay Kenyon. She of Wenatchee, Washington. I had the pleasure of spending some time with her and her wonderful husband. If you've never read or met Kay, well, you're in for a treat today. Kay is the author of over a dozen science fiction and fantasy novels. Her science fiction books include, mind you, The Entire and the Rose Quartet, Maximum Ice, and The Seeds of Time. And her fantasy novels are At the Table of Wolves, which is book one of the Dark Talent novels, A Thousand Perfect Things, and Queen of the Deep. Her novels have been nominated for the Philip K. Dick Award, the Endeavor Award, the John W. Campbell Award, and have been twice nominated for the American Library Association Reading List Awards. Now, actually, there's one book that's not listed, I did not list, and that is book two of the Dark Talent series, Serpent in the Heather, which is published today. And we're lucky enough to have Kay with us. Kay, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bill. I'm thrilled to be here with my favorite interviewer.
Oh, aren't you nice? Thank you, Kay.
No, well, I'm telling the truth.
Thank you. I like doing these things. You don't hear a funny story about that? Recently, while driving back from your lovely retreat, I was listening to a podcast by Mark Maron's podcast. And I never listened to podcasts, but I started listening to his, and I'm like, hey, this is kind of fun. I get why people might actually like my podcast. Isn't that pathetic? I never listened to him until I listened to his, and then I figured out why people might want to listen to one. it was
you
useful
know, that's
to
very
me.
Common.
Does that make sense?
I know a lot of writers that don't read their own work once they're published. You know, they never even crack
the book
to read it. You know, it's like, I just don't.
No.
It's like an old lover. You know, why? I'm on to the next thing.
Yeah, it's true. Boy, I had an epiphany about that recently, and I realized I was unhappy if my attention wasn't on the next thing I was going to create or was interested in creating. If I let my attention go backwards a little bit, I became all miserable and depressed. And I didn't realize how often I would let myself do that, you know, that you got to keep your eyes kind of forward all the time. Does that make sense?
Well, you know, it's really over when it's over. And,
it is.
You know, there's only so much basking that you can do, although I think it's very helpful to celebrate and feel really proud, but that lasts for about 30 seconds, and then you know, you do look ahead of yourself. Yeah, I think it's normal to look back and feel some accomplishment. Sometimes I kind of retell my stories to myself when I'm going to sleep at night. I don't know why
you
do? I do that. That's just, it's
does it help you relax?
It does.
Your own stories.
My own stories. I just kind of sink into them. I know exactly what happened. I'm kind of enjoying being with those characters again. But in my waking hours, never look back. No.
No. Well, actually, although if ever you're going to look back a little bit, today might be is the kind of day where you might, because as I mentioned in my intro, today is the publication date for Serpent in the Heather, book 2 of your fascinating Dark Talent series. You got it. I mean, I saw a pic. We were talking beforehand. I don't know what social media I was on. I think it was Facebook. And there you are with your, what's your cat's name? He's hilarious.
Winston.
He looked just like Winston Churchill sitting on the couch. Splayed leg, and you had a glass of wine. You were. This was a celebratory moment. It must have been. It's out.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Good. And you know, today is, you know, it's a little different. Right. Right.
Yeah.
And that
only
comes around about once every 12 months or 18 months.
Yeah. Hopefully, knock on wood. And so, I mean, so besides talking to me, what do you normally do on a publication day? Is there do you have a do you do like the book party type, like go to a bookstore and do a little thing, or do you not bother with that anymore?
Well, I'm finding it hard to do book parties because I publish, you know, maybe a lot. It's kind of tough. I mean, I think when you publish your first book, that's party time. But luckily for me, on Pub Day, I've worked really hard the week before, getting everything ready to go. So I wake up in the morning on Pub Day, and then I've got my tweets ready on TweetDeck, and they're already pre-scheduled. And I'm combing for notifications on TweetBook, on Twitter and Facebook, and I'm just done a bunch of interviews. And so I'm linking, and then I put out a newsletter that was ready to go. And then I'm kind of watching for reactions. I'm watching for reviews. And I'm retweeting them. And it's obnoxious. It's, look at me.
Well, but you kind of, you know, you have to. You know what? I feel like one of the novelist jobs when they're publicizing themselves is to let people know the damn thing exists. You've got to say, look, it's here. If you want to read it, you can. But you've got to let people know it exists, you know. You've got to help
let people
know it exists. You have
to. And one of the things that people do that is probably a little misguided is they trumpet the book a lot, 2 or 3 weeks or a month ahead of time. And really, you should just kind of be quiet about things. I mean, every now and then, remember, my book comes out in 3 weeks. Wait until the day it comes out, because then they can click on the link, and that's a sell page. Otherwise, they click on the link, and it goes to the sell page, and it says, well, it's not available.
I agree. How disappointing.
Yeah, so that's a little tip
you want
there.
Them to, that's right. You want them to be able to buy it right then. That's why I don't – yes, I mean, I will be – I think – so we just went out with my book, and so we're in the waiting and see to see who's going to buy it. But when we sell it, I am not going to really talk about it until right beforehand, you know, because I don't want people getting
all
– I'll write about it a little bit.
just a little bit, you know, and a nice
yeah.
brag when you sell it.
Sure.
You know, something very relaxed, like, so excited to announce that, you know, and
meanwhile
your head is exploding, you're so happy.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's true. You want, it's true. You want to, you do it. Well, so, all right, so the book's out, that's great. You and I, I mentioned in my intro, I was over there. Thank you again for having me. We won't discuss my trip back. It's another story.
No,
but my trip over was great.
No.
We spent 2 days together. It was great. It was just writing. It's interesting, Kay, you and I got together, and you and I had not spent extended periods of time together, but we had a lot of time.
Right.
And we ended up talking about writing. A lot about writing.
We did.
It's what happens, isn't it? We talked about other stuff.
Well,
but
it is,
man,
it
we
is
talked
for
about.
You because you're on the road a lot teaching about writing, and it is for
That's
me
true.
Too because I do a little less, but I'm always interested in how to approach it, how to frame it, how to live with it, and how to teach others, and what are the real critical points. Like right now, I'm teaching a seminar with 6 people in my home, and we meet every 2 weeks. And, you know, I really had to sit down with each of my sessions and think, I can't just goose feed people everything I know about writing novels. I have to really plan out what rises to the top here. What are the conceptual things, you know? And so it's hard, and it's very interesting work to really try to pull together things you truly, honestly believe. Not just things you think you should believe, but the things that you've used over and over and that you actually do believe from the heart.
Yeah, it's true.
So I had to do that.
And think
it
about
was
teaching,
a good exercise for me.
I'll bet it was. Oh, I found, you know, it was so interesting. I was teaching a class once, and it was memoir. And one of the rules I find of memoir is, like, try to put it in scene. Like, don't just talk about how what a pain your dad was. Like, show me a scene with you and your dad. You know, actual dramatic, like it was a novel. So I said, so you want it in scene, people. You want it in scene. And this woman said, what's a scene? And I was like, I thought I know what a scene is since I was 4 or something that I didn't know how to describe it. But in having to talk to her about it's something that happens in action with beginning, middle, and end, and you have a character in a place and they're doing something, that I learned a bit about it that I kind of retaught myself by having to teach someone what a scene is.
That's just what I mean. When you really have to pin it down, it causes you just to dig a little deeper into yourself.
Yeah. And also, I find interesting is that. But you did you study writing? I know you studied like voice or acting. Was that some kind of performance? Wasn't it?
Oh, you know, I almost took a degree in theater, and I used to do a lot of radio and voiceover work.
Right.
For TV, but. As far as studying writing, not very much. But then, after I wrote a novel and it got nowhere, I went to Pacific Northwest Writers Conference and realized that there was so much learning to be done at conferences. And then I started a learning process. And that started about 20 years ago for me. Yeah.
Right. But, so you're self-taught. I mean, I also am self-taught. I didn't really study it formally. So the reason I mention it is, you know, you learn, nothing teaches you like, I mean, I don't think anything teaches like experience. That's really where learning happens. And I think of my students that what I'm trying to do is give them something they can go practice on their own, because that's when they're going to really, even if it's the fearless writing stuff, which is, of course, not about the craft, but it's about working with the mental challenge of writing. I try to give them tools. And I remind them, like, this is great what we're doing here, but it's you putting it into practice. That's when you're really going to learn it. You know, as teachers, we can't sit there and put the pen in their hand. It's going to be them. It's like, how do you set them up for them to learn themselves? Because that's really where it's going to happen, I think.
Well, that's right. And writing is a constant act of judgment, because you have all these. I think it's great to learn tools for the toolbox, and so many people don't bother. So I think the classes and workshops are great, and they help you know what the tools are, how they might be used. But but the judgment is so exquisite that you, well, shall I do this? You know, shall I foreshadow? How do I do the opening? You know, do I want to make it wrap it around things? Do I want to hook? Do I just want to dive in? And those decisions are just, I like to think of it as both your exquisite privilege and your hideous obligation.
That's right. Well, this is it.
You
the
know,
page is blank.
You justified yourself. And
that
is helped along by doing it a lot. That's for sure.
But
you're still, like you say, facing that empty page every day. And the more you use the tools, the more natural it becomes to consider, as you're starting out, well, is my plot thick enough or do I need a subplot? You know, would subplot add texture or would it be a distraction?
Right.
You know, but at least you know that subplot is a tool. I mean, I'm teaching folks right now, and not one of them has thought to use a subplot. And I'm thinking, well, good, let's talk about that as a tool and in what ways that it can be helpful and what things to watch for. Just open up, just, you know, give them the Phillips head screwdriver and say, now you've got this in your toolbox. You may want to use it or not.
You know, what reminds me of, I write music, I don't know what, casually, I guess you would say, but I'm very interested in it, and I always think of that with, like, certain kinds of chords, like seventh chords and ninth chords and augmented chords. These things you learn about, each one of them creates a very specific kind of sound, and you have to learn about those sounds so that you know, like, if I want this experience in my song, this, you know, this augmented chord will do that for me, or this seventh chord will do that for me. But you have to learn that the chords exist and then know what experience they create in the song to know if they belong there. Because each one creates
something
different.
Well, see, that's fantastic. I like what you said. What kind of experience it creates. Because, you know, that seems to me the essence of what we're doing in fiction is that we are creating a vicarious experience. And how does that get on the page? And how will you feel when you're reading it? You know, what will it be? Not just emotionally, but how, you know, is it noir? Is it exciting? Is it mellow? Is it moving? Am I learning something? You know, what is that experience you're giving someone? And that's one of those ineffable skills of judgment that you know, separates out the ones that are going to be published from the ones that aren't. Because although we don't want to be thinking about the audience when we're writing necessarily, but we're always conscious that we are trying to create an experience for them.
Yeah.
So are you getting it on the page or just using words?
Because all we have, I wrote about this recently, because my brother said to me, he does film and TV and music too, but he was as a kid, he was not academic, and he was going to be an actor, but we were both artistic, you know, we would make each other laugh and we would play games together, but I was the one who was going to be the writer, and he turned to me at one point and said, Bill, what's with the writing thing? All you get is words. Like, that's all you have. There's no sound, there's no color, there's no bodies. You know, you think of film and theater, there's like all this physical stuff, but all there is, and that's our challenge, is we only get words. I don't get to be there reading it to people, you know, most of the time. It's just words on a blank page. How do you make that come to life? You have to be super interested in that challenge because all you get are words.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Right, but in a way, you know, we're all about words. Don't you think? I mean, we're all about
human beings. You mean?
Well, of course, we're. Yeah. I mean, I was going to say you and I are, but we're having a conversation and we're writers. So, but
yeah,
I just think you know, it's like saying all we've got is love. But you know, it's,
that's right.
Words are everything. In a way, the only way we communicate long things. Anyway. We could communicate with a hug or...
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, in thought, it allows you to string thought. I always think of writing as thinking on purpose, you know? You're not just thinking sloppily and accidentally. You're thinking on purpose because every sentence is like a thought.
I agree. I think that's great for nonfiction. But I think for fiction, I'd have to come up with a counterpoint. And maybe I would say... Well,
Dreaming on purpose, maybe? Dreaming? Doesn't feel like thinking. I guess thinking is a little...
It's like...
Yeah, it's not quite thinking.
Creating a place and relationships. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, that would take some thought to figure out.
Now, when I was back there, when I was back talking to you, one of the things that came up is that I thought this was fascinating, is that you had, I mean, you've been doing this a while. You published a lot of books. But, you know, the challenge of the writer, it really begins every time she sits down to a new book, you know. I remember Alice Hoffman saying when first time I interviewed her, like, every time I start a book, I feel like I don't know how to do this. You know, even though she's written however many she'd written, right? And so you had recently gone through a phase. I don't want to drudge up any painful memories, but you had gone through a phase that seemed important to you as a person, where you were having trouble, where you didn't sell a book. You went a couple years where things weren't coming together. I mean, I know who wrote Robichaud. James Lee Burke went a decade without selling a book, he told me, and it's more than that, 13 years. So it happens sometimes. But you went through one of those, and it was rough, but it sounds like you came out the other side a little wiser. Do you mind talking about that a little bit?
No, I don't mind. By the time I went through a little bit of a dry spell, I was kind of shocked because I had been selling steadily for a number of years. And so I was a little unprepared, but because I had been writing so many novels, I decided that though I wasn't able to sell right now, that I would write anyway. And so I wrote two novels that I wasn't sure I could sell, but I just thought, you know, if I give up on it, then I'm sure it won't sell because I won't have anything. So that's the only way you can guarantee that you won't sell, or you won't you won't finish is to not write it. And so I was so habituated to writing that I did keep on. But one of the things that happened in the midst of that was I was such a bulldog about writing that that wasn't a problem for me. But what was a problem was my attitude, because I realized that I was really worried and kind of unhappy. You know, I had to admit that I led a golden life. You know, I've got a beautiful yard and a wonderful husband and a cat that drinks wine with me. You know, and what could be wrong? but yeah, you know, this is how important writing is to you when you've built your whole career and persona around it. And I my nose was on the cement for a while there, and it was a good experience because I drew back. And we gained a perspective, but boy, was it different than what I had. Before, it was just all about success as a writer, and it's not about that anymore. I mean, you just can't let it become the be-all and end-all to you, because it's so fraught with uncertainty, and you don't want to drag through life thinking it's a struggle. When you're doing the thing love, I'm doing it because I love it, but I'm so unhappy and I'm struggling and I'm so worried.
Right.
Jeez, that'll kill you in the end, right?
It will. Yeah, you have to. But, it's, you know, the success. It's like you can't. If you rely on that, because you know it can change. I mean, it doesn't have to, and for some people it doesn't. But you know, like that, how other people react to your work can change. Particularly if you're trying to find, you know, because sometimes your own work goes through a shift, you know, and you begin, and sometimes you have to find the story. Maybe you're needing a new story you have to tell, and maybe the old ones aren't working or whatever it is. You can't, if we rely on how people react to our work to feel good about ourselves, we're screwed, because you know that just can change. And you have to look elsewhere for it.
But think about this. I mean, when you're a novelist, you are tied to the star of the publishing world.
Oh,
you know,
no doubt.
You might spend 12 or 18 months writing a novel, and then they say, well, no, not this one. And you think, wait a
yeah.
minute. did you just use four words, no, not this one? Because that means that, you know, thousands of hours, you don't realize, oh, my God.
I just
can't
pull these things out of my pocket.
Yeah. And so, you know better than to count on success, but yet you're stuck with it because it's like telling someone to go, you know, let's say an 17-year-old, you know, here's a violin, you wanted to play the violin, now go spend 10,000 hours practicing, and then then when they do, they come out great. Now go in the bathroom and play. No one must ever hear you.
No, I know.
You know, it's like if my novel, I can't just copy it off and distribute it to friends. You know,
no.
There's not enough paper in the world to do that. And
no.
Besides, it's a handful. What you want to do is communicate your stories with people. So
yeah.
It's a special problem for novelists and anyone writing in the long form, you know, writing nonfiction as well, but especially
yeah.
for novelists because there's so many people that want to be novelists.
Sure,
so
there are
special there are special dangers in that field. It really behooves us to have some inner chops, doesn't it?
It does. You,
you know,
can't. You just, there's just there isn't the time clock to rest on. You know, and part of the reason we want to be writers is we don't want a time clock. I think we don't want the place of employment in a way. We want to say to ourselves, what am I interested in? What do I want to create? That's why we do it, and with that comes this other challenge of a kind of lack of certainty that other careers, like your husband's a lawyer, he's not going to go through that problem in that way. He might have it elsewhere, but not
mm-hmm.
that way. So you got it. We make a deal with ourselves, although we may not see it that way when we start, but that's the deal we make. That's why I wrote Fearless Writing, because
so
I know it's rough. It can be rough for people.
It's rough, but it's, you know, it's kind of the garden path because we love it so much and it's so much fun when it goes well. My God.
I know it is.
You know,
don't you feel good when you're doing it?
Sentence. Oh, yeah. It's almost like a drug because you get in the zone as people talk about
yeah.
it. And that's true. And I think because it's so attractive, that hearts get broken and lives get a little go into a deep slump. You just got to have more going on there than writing. I was talking with a writer the other day, and she said something that people often say to me, and I just don't believe it. She said, "I can't not write." And
oh,
I thought,
interesting.
You know,
you could.
You can not write. This is not life or death. This is not art. This is a craft. And you could choose to throw pots and glaze them, and it is good and fine and valuable work. And the same with writing. It's good and fine and valuable, but it is not high art. It is not the spiritual.
Oh, you don't think of it as high art. Interesting. You put it in a different category.
Well, I think I do it with caution. I'm saying you can't be so overawed by writing that it's more important than you being a human being.
Absolutely.
And of course, you're not going to become a beast. You're not going to become stupid and selfish. But
right.
you can still kind of go sideways on this stuff. You know, it's, I call it the yo-yo. You know, you become a yo-yo to success or failure.
Yeah.
Said that they don't like my work well enough to buy it, but they'll sure look for it in the library. Oh, now I'm depressed. You know, like.
Right. No, you can't. You live by the sword, you die by the sword. If you're going to feel good every time someone likes your work, then you have to feel bad when they don't.
That's why a little separation is so useful, and that's why
yeah.
I say you can not write. If it starts to kill you, you can pull back, and you don't have to write. And besides, who among us is really nurturing their connections to others, their connections to nature, their connections
to their inner
self, you know, so that they are more than writing.
That's
and,
right.
You know, beginning
it's
writers
part of the
maybe
reason,
don't realize that that's a danger. But
it is. It's part of the reason I like to write music is that it gives me another creative outlet that
oh,
for
yeah,
the moment is not
I
professional.
Bet.
you know, it might be at some point,
yeah,
but it's not now. So it's quite nice. Now, normally, I ask my last question, which is, if writing has taught you anything, has taught you what? When I asked you this question, you gave me a great answer, which was that writing has taught you, which is really an extension of what we've just been talking about, that it can't kill you, can't save you, but it can't kill you, I believe was your
right.
I loved that answer. That was your answer then. Is there anything you'd like to add to that? Is there anything you want to tack on to that about what writing has taught you? Maybe it's taught you it in the last year.
Let's see. Yeah, if I'm not just a writer, then I should be spending time doing something else. And it's
yeah.
so hard for me to do that. You've got music, but what
yeah,
do I have? You know? And now that I've got two books out and a third on the way, and now I'm thinking about, oh my God, what am I going to write for the next book? Am I, you know, I have to struggle. I do. I meditate. I walk.
Well,
I be in the present moment. And it's that for me is a discipline to move away from writing and become a whole person.
Yeah.
I know that sounds kind of foolish.
No.
And yet,
when
your whole life has been about that, you know, you need to work at it. At least I do.
Yeah. Practicing being in the present moment is a lifelong discipline, in my experience.
You know, it is, and I'm so glad you said that because it's a wonderful discipline for writers because sometimes
yeah.
when they go on a walk, it's a plot walk. You know,
yeah,
even when they're taking
yeah.
a walk, if they
That's
call
right.
it a plot walk, and it's like,
That's
can
right.
you just notice the world as it passes you on your walk,
yeah.
and then you realize, oh my God, I can't. I keep thinking.
Yeah.
I keep thinking,
yeah.
and I'm not here.
yeah.
And, you know,
oh,
think of, all right, Bill, think of your poor, not your, but Bill, think of the poor writer's brain. If you're that focused and you don't give your brain anything else but falling onto the couch exhausted at 7 o'clock and then watching
right.
a little TV, get up in the
yeah.
morning and off again. What are we giving our brain to nurture them?
Yeah, let the brain rest. Give it a little let it have a blank page now and again to look at.
Oh, wow, that's a great line.
Right? Let it go to the blank. Well,
right,
all right.
Right.
So that's a good answer. I like that. And The Serpent and the Heather, which was published today. Now, if people were just to buy that, would it make sense or do they have to read At the Table of Wolves first?
Oh, if it does stand alone, but the At the Table of Wolves should come first, I think, yeah.
Right,
because
but you, if they wanted just to
the
buy The Serpent and Heather, they could, but
yep.
At the Table of Wolves, it's book two, all right.
Absolutely.
Well,
right, right.
Are you going to be, if they go to, is it, let me see, the it's kkenyon.com, kkenyon.com, they can go there and they can see where you're going to be, if you're going to be somewhere, is that right?
Right, appearances and interviews and things like that. They're all on my bio page, right?
Right.
And I
Excellent.
Just want to mention
well,
I'll be at the U Bookstore on Friday, May 4th at 7
oh.
o'clock signing books. So I'll be over there.
Oh, over in my neck
yeah.
of the woods. Oh,
very yeah.
good. Well, I hope the pass is nice to you. The pass
well, in May
kind.
It better be or I'm quitting.
It better be in May. Kay, it was great talking to you. Congratulations on book two of The Dark Talents. I'm sure book, what, another year we're going to see book three?
Beg pardon?
Another year, or how long before book three? A year,
oh.
18 months?
Oh,
let's
yeah,
not even
yeah.
talk about it. Let's enjoy this one now.
About a year.
All right.
About a year. I mean, it's already in production, so.
Well, congratulations and good luck with the next one.
Thank you, Bill. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Take it easy.
Thanks.
Well, everybody, it's true. Can't kill you. Can't save you. Get interested in something besides writing. It can be helpful. Let's see. Next week, I'm going to be here again talking to Corinne Zupko. I can't remember what she wrote. How sad is that? I just can't. But I remember I was very interested in her. So we'll see what that's all about. Until then, go find someone you love and something you love and just do it!